Welcome back to another episode of Network and Chill. I am your co-host, Red, joined by my co-host, Rick, and we're excited today to have a great guest. Before we get into the conversation, I just want to give a big shout out to all our sponsors and partners and allowing us to do this great work in this community, making some huge impact. Amplify Louisville, Amped, the Health Equity Hub at U of L and Humana Foundation, and as well as the Office of Equity at the Metro United government as well. With that being said, we have a great guest today and really excited for the conversation. So I'll kick it to you, Rick, to intro our special guest today.
All right. Gives me great pleasure today to introduce the NORI Project, bringing accessibility, affordability, and attainability to cities near you, by bringing high-tech, Japanese-inspired vending machines stocked with affordable and nutritious food items to every city and block. The NORI Project will solve racial equity in food and nutrition by monsooning American food deserts in a way that food pantries and charities could never. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Dr. Nora Norton.
Yay, thank you. That was a great introduction.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you, thank you. I've been practicing that.
Nora, it's a pleasure to have you today. We're excited for the conversation and more about the project you're working on. Before we get started into that, give us a background of who you are and kind of your entry point into entrepreneurship.
Yeah, so I am originally from Versailles, Kentucky, Woodford County, where they make Woodford Reserve. I'm sure you all have had a taste of that before. So that's where I'm from, and I grew up poor, just me and my mom in the projects, my family was pretty tight-knit, and they instilled in me that I had to do better than they had. So I became a first-gen college grad, and I always wanted to be a lawyer since I was a kid, not really sure why. It was just something that was on me to do. And after I graduated college, took a gap year, went to law school at U of L. I've got all three of my degrees from U of L. So that's essentially me in a nutshell. But my segue into entrepreneurship was kind of not planned at all. I always in the back of my head wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I was a little scared. So in between taking bar exams post law school, I decided to take a break, and I ended up at U of L's Innovation Weekend, where they had people come with their businesses, with their business ideas, and you know, really work on fleshing out those ideas. And I wasn't even supposed to be there, but a buddy of mine was going, and she was like, "You should go." And I was like, "Okay, whatever." So I went. I met Natalia Bishop. So we know how that goes. That changed my life a lot. She helped me flesh out my idea, and then she was like, "Great, this is cool. You have an amazing concept. What are you gonna name it?" And it was all very fast. It was just the weekend, and I was like, "The NORI Project." So here I am, I think 8 months later from that ideation situation. So
wow, I think that's so cool. One, stepping outside of your comfort zone and being in a place I'm not supposed to be here, but wow, I got this information. And then to network and connect with Natalia. We all know Natalia is plugging people in. You know, she's great with helping and, you know, supporting businesses. So, I mean, that's awesome and speaks to the Louisville community and how supportive we have been, you know, in the startup community just over the past, like I said, 3-4 years that we've been back here kind of doing this has been great. So I'm glad that to hear that that was the segment into entrepreneurship. It's like I went to this event, I mean, and met someone and like that sparked the whole idea. And now like, look where we are. So that's awesome.
For sure. And then shortly thereafter. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Shortly thereafter, I met Lydia Henshaw with Amplify. And to your point, Ricky, the Louisville community is so embracing of people becoming entrepreneurs. Like, I met her and her willingness to help, and now she's a main advisor, and she's on my team for the NORI project. But at first I was a little taken aback. I was like, what does this lady want from me? She's giving me so much free game, so much help, so much aid, you know. But it's been an amazing welcoming process for sure.
Yeah,
I love to hear that. And
I see you win.
I see the experiences, and hearing the conversation of you step out the box, going to this new event. But take us back to that gap year, because going to an event and then actually having an ideal to build on, like, how did that come about that weekend through your experiences that kind of led you not only to attend the event, but actually have some ideals and create a business around it?
Yeah, so I actually fell on pretty hard times. I had graduated law school in 2021. And due to COVID and everything else, the class before me had graduated and they were unable to take the bar exam. And so what typically happens, you graduate law school, you take the bar exam, you pass, you're licensed to practice, and you become an attorney, so on and so forth. But because of COVID, they physically were not able to sit down and take the exam. So you had tons of people with Juris Doctorate degrees that could not take it to the next level of practicing. So Kentucky passed a law, a temporary law, to allow a supervised practice of law for a certain amount of months. And that was to give people the ability to practice under supervision until they were able to take the bar exam due to all the COVID chaos. So that law trickled down onto my class, as I was the next class afterwards to graduate. And so after I graduated, and let me tell you guys something about the bar exam. So you take it in the summertime, you get results late October. It is insane how long it takes, especially when most of the exam is a Scantron form anyway. So I took the exam like everybody does right out of law school. And then the job I had lined up was public defending in Shelbyville, Kentucky. So that too was a lifelong dream of mine. I was like, I want to be a public defender. I want to help people. I love criminal law. My bachelor's degree is in criminal justice. So I was all for it. I was gung-ho. So I start practicing, and I very quickly realized that this ain't it. And it wasn't just the public defending. It was the practicing of law in general. I very quickly could not stand it. And I was like, I feel like I'm being put in a box where I don't quite belong. I felt kind of shrunken down and too big for the box that the law put me in. And this is before I got my bar results back. So I'm still awaiting bar results. And in my head, I'm like, I don't even want to do this. But then I'm like, oh, please, God, please let me pass this exam. So at this point, I've been practicing for a couple months before I even get results back. I get results back and I learned that I had failed. So that law that trickled down allowed me to retake the exam one more time while still practicing and just keeping that train going. So obviously I was heartbroken that there was this thing that I always wanted to do. I was being told I wasn't good enough when I knew I was, because I was killing it in the courtroom, okay? So I was like, I don't know. So, and one thing about public defending, it's a hard job. So I was doing that hard job and then trying to study for the hardest exam I ever took in my life. So that did not work out well. And I took it again the next time it was administered, which was in February. Again, same thing. You take it, and then like several months later, you finally get results. So at that point, I took it again while I'm full-time public defending this time. And then months later, I found out I failed again by 3 points. So I said, okay. At that point, I was like, I already didn't really want to do this. I just felt obligated to take it again. So I was like, I guess I'm going to take it again. And luckily, I had some people in my corner that were like, you know, this is your life and you can do what you want to do, right? And at the time, I didn't really know what that was. I just had been so focused on crossing that finish line, I guess. So what I decided to do was take a break. And I did. I took that break because law school was a miserable process for me. It was absolutely miserable. and I was worn out. So I took that break. I got a job doing something else, contracts or something. And that's when my friend was like, "Hey, there's an event, and I know you have business ideas," because during that break, I was able to think and open my creativity. In the legal world, creativity is not rewarded. And so that's another reason why I felt like it wasn't a fit for me. So once I finally took my brain out of that mindset, my creativity opened back up, and I was like, "Oh, I have a business idea for this, 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 and this." So my friend was like, "You should come to this event," and that's how it happened.
Wow, that's cool. I mean, I really feel like sometimes you started this dream as a child and you went through all of these steps and you got there and you're like, man, this is not it for me. Like, I got to do the next thing and make that pivot. And I think that sometimes a lot of people get locked in and they don't know how to make that pivot and to find that new dream, that passion. Because, I mean, yeah, you had that, you started that as a child and you got there and you're like, man, this is not what I thought it was. I'm not, having the impact the way, and it's taking effect on me, after I go home. I think that's a huge thing. And for you to have the courage to, step up and take that pivot and say, hey, I'm gonna go on to the next thing, I think is really huge. And I think a lot of people need to hear that story because a lot of people don't take that pivot. They stay. They keep, in that cycle over and over again and expect a different result.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I did not want to do. I was like, "This is not working for me. I know it's not working, and I can do what I want. This is my life." So it was a very hard, challenging thing mentally to do, but I'm super thankful.
And you had the right people in your corner, of course, it sounds like, encouraging you and supporting you through that. So that's always great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that creativity, that peace, to have the fluidity. Like, I'm just not this. I can do other things as well. So important. And leaning on your lifelong experiences. So, tell us more about the Nuri Project. What cultivated that, and really what kind of jump started this journey over the last 8 months for you?
Yeah, so the idea I had when I went to the Innovation Weekend at U of L was like, I had an idea for a vending machine company, but it mostly was based in, making some residual income. But the thing about this weekend was that your innovation had to have a social impact. And so I sat with it and I thought with it for a while, and I was like, "What is important to me socially?" At the crux, at my core, am an activist, and that's another reason why I wanted to be a public defender. So I really thought about that, and once I got my juices going, I thought about my experience growing up food insecure and things like that, and I thought about the experience I had while I was studying law in Japan, and essentially, it was kind of a marriage of those two ideas. Was taking that inspiration I learned in Japan with the vending machines and merging it with food insecurity in America and all of the food deserts here. So I put that together into that concept, and that's kind of the short route to it, if that answers the question.
No, I think that that's a huge part of it is like passion. Like, I think that if you're gonna get out here and start a business and think you're gonna do something that no one else has done, then you gotta have a passion for that. And typically, you find that somewhere along the lines of that innovative spark and, that, like you said, the things that happened in your life and your family. And I think that that's one of the huge things for a lot of us when it comes to talking about food and the impacts that food had on us and our family. So, could you talk a little bit about how the impacts that, nutrition and food and being in a food insecure place had on you growing up and how that, made this passion grow within you to start this project?
Yeah, so my mom did a phenomenal job providing for me. A lot of times I didn't realize that we were going without because she just did that damn good of a job. And it wasn't until I was older where I really realized some things, like some of the things I ate. When I tell you this lady has a magical power of making pork chops and potatoes and some canned vegetable and adding a million different varieties to it, it is insane. But that's the type of things we ate. We ate a lot of canned food. We ate a lot of food that really didn't have that much nutrition. So once I got to college, well, I'll say towards the end of college, because I was very broke when I was in college. So towards the end of college, I started to get some money, and I worked with an attorney that only bought things from Whole Foods. And she took me to Whole Foods for the first time in my life. I was like maybe 19 or 20. And she was like, look at this here, look at this here. And it was all new things to me. There were new vegetables, new fruits I had never seen in my life. And then, you know, with the money I was getting, I was like, I'm taking my ass back to Whole Foods and I'm gonna try these things. And, you know, once I started to eat these things that were better for me, I started to feel better and everything started to get better. And I was like, this is insane how much of a difference good, nutritious food has on your life. And so that's kind of what sparked, you know, my interest in high nutritional food. And then when I was in my last year of law school, I moved to the West End. And that was also the tip of COVID, right before COVID happened. I moved to the West and I knew I was moving to a food desert, but I didn't care. You know, I was like, I have a car, I can get to Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, whatever. It's not a big deal. So what I ended up doing was I ended up trying to Instacart food once the pandemic hit, and you know, everywhere was like, don't go outside, don't breathe, don't do anything. And I quickly learned that nobody would deliver food to me because I was in the West. And to be completely honest with y'all, that was some bullshit because I spent my entire life, you know, working towards this goal of being an attorney. I've got these degrees. I'm about to, you know, so I was like, I've worked my ass off and I cannot get fresh food. That is insane to me. And it was enraging. And then if you remember at the beginning of the pandemic, we didn't even have face masks. So from my trip in Japan, I bought some face masks because it's trendy in Japan or whatever. So I still had some left over from that trip. I built up the courage, I put on a face mask and I went to the one Kroger in the West. And I kid you not, it looked like somebody had run over the produce section with a lawnmower. And there was nothing there. I went to that store to get foods that could help boost my immunity. You know, turmeric shots, things like that. It did not exist in that store. At that point, I had risked my life, what I thought was risking my life at the beginning of COVID because we didn't know what was going on, to get this food that did not exist in that store. So then I was even madder. But more than anything, it shrunk me back down into feeling that like that poor black kid again, that couldn't get what I needed. And I was like, I've made it too far to feel that way, especially with something as simple as obtaining food. It was insane to me. And I'm not gonna lie, I lost track of the question there. So you might have to remind me to make sure I answered it.
No, that's good. I
No,
think because I think you bring up a lot of good points right there. I think when you talk about food deserts and the type of nutritional foods in 2023, you think that that should be easily accessible to any and everyone, right? And I think it
Right.
gives us perspective of not taking it for granted because it's not the case. And you having this full circle moment of living in different areas across the world and tying these things back together. It just gives you the creativity that we all have something within us to make the impact in our local communities. So I'm excited to kind of just hear that background and you tying that together because I think many people haven't thought about it from that perspective. And it's so important to hear the challenges that we have right here in Louisville, Kentucky. Imagine the other cities across America that are dealing with very, very similar problems as well. And so I think we were just kind of thinking through like what were some of those influences in Japan that you saw, like, and then some of the things you really enjoy there, and that you said, oh, I can bring this back and make and curate it here in Kentucky and make an ideal of this, and then expand that out.
I enjoyed everything about Japan, even the random Japanese people that would touch my hair and didn't ask permission first. I enjoyed it all. So, one of the things I did when I was in Japan, there were two universities. So, I got a scholarship, the Robert Brown Global Scholarship. He's a former alum at the University of Louisville Brandeis School of Law. And he granted two scholarships for students to travel to Japan and spend a week studying Japanese law. I got the scholarship. And I was so excited because the furthest I've been across the world was like Mexico on a cruise. I went to Japan and I made the biggest mistake because there were two campuses for this university. And one was in downtown Tokyo, which is where I was supposed to be, and the other was out in the mountains. So, of course, me not knowing anything about Japan, I booked the wrong one. So what that meant was every day to make it to class, I had to take a 2 hour train ride. And but again, I'm in Japan, screw it. I mean, let's enjoy it. I don't know if this will ever happen again. So my Airbnb was beautiful. It was out in Hachioji, Japan, and I had to walk down this huge hill to get to the train station every day. And the very first day, I'm very type A. So I had planned out everything, scheduled everything. I was like, I'm gonna be early to this class on time, everything. So I've got my shoes on. For some reason, I thought it was cute to wear very American political t-shirts while I was in Japan. So my t-shirt was like Black Lawyers Matter, and it was just insane. So I'm wearing this t-shirt. I'm just happy to be in Japan. I'm walking down this hill, and I see this big box just on the sidewalk. And I was like, what is that? So I'm walking, I look to the front of it, and it's a vending machine. And I was like, there is no way that is a vending machine just there on the sidewalk. There's nothing covering it. And I was like, this is insane. So I was like, I'm gonna use it because why not? I'm in Japan. So I pull out some yen and I put some yen in the machine. I get a little thing of coffee. And I was like, ooh, I'm cool, whatever. So I keep walking, going to the subway station. And if you all have never been to Japan, you have to go. And when you go, you need to tell me about your trip to 7-Eleven because Japan has 7-Elevens everywhere. They're like little mini US embassies because they have ATMs and everything else. It's insane. So I took a trip to 7-Eleven and they had these little rice balls called onigiri. And I'd get one every morning. That would be my breakfast. It was a ball of rice and it had salmon on the inside. And it was wrapped in seaweed called nori and sprinkled with sesame seeds. And I loved it. It was so tasty. It was fresh. I liked it. But so I get on Subway. I take this 2 hour ride. Nobody wants to sit next to me on the train because I look like I do. And then once I get to downtown Tokyo off the train, there's more vending machines everywhere. But these had fresh produce in them. I saw one that could sell you hot ramen. I was like, ain't no way. And I kid you not, I was late to my first class in this program because I was playing around with these vending machines. I was so embarrassed. I was one of two Americans in the class and I was late. But that's how, astonishing it was to me. To me, in that moment, it was out of this world. There's a vending machine operating outside and it's got fresh food in it. What a hot meal. What? I was like, why don't we have this in the States, And this was my second year of law school. So that would be 1, 2, maybe almost 3 years before the Nori Project. So I had this thought back then, like, why don't we have this in the States? But again, I was, had that tunnel vision, finish law school, get your license, keep it moving. But that's really what sparked it, was that experience over there.
Wow. And like you said, you brought all of that together, like that innovation, that passion, all brought together to start the Nori Project. And to, like I said, in Louisville, living in the West End, growing up in the West End, like, yeah, it's a real problem. Like, I want a smoothie, a salad, or anything. I mean, they closed S Bar, so we ain't got that no more. But I feel like, yeah, there aren't very many places where you can, get fresh food. It's all, something processed or, fast food restaurant. So I think that this is definitely a huge need there. So I'm thinking, I guess one of my biggest questions is, what type of things are you thinking about putting in, one of these vending machines, to meet the needs of the folks in the West?
So definitely. So these machines are gonna be to scale all across the city. And once we get done monsooning the city of Louisville, we plan to move out nationwide as well. But starting in Louisville, we plan to put these machines in very strategic locations across the entire city. And the benefit of this corporation, our social impact arm, is that with each purchase you make, there's a cost subsidization that gives back to those food deserts in Louisville. So that's how that social impact kind of works. But particularly with these locations on where we're gonna put these machines, we plan on putting culturally relevant meals. in them. And they're all healthy. Everything in there is going to be healthy. I'm not putting no chips, no coke. If that's what you want, get somebody else to do it, because you're not going to get it from the Noi Project machines. But as far as the meals, they're going to be healthy meals and they're going to be culturally relevant. And I'm working with a phenomenal chef that's really good at doing that. And he too experienced food insecurity as a kid. So this mission is important to him as well. And gosh, he cooks amazingly. But so it's important to us to make sure that where our machines are going are focused on the people that will use it the most and matching their demographics and matching their taste buds and the foods that they're familiar with. Because it, say, for example, we put a couple machines in the West, it's predominantly black and brown there. I don't want to introduce foods that they may not have ever had before because they are healthy. Like I said, I didn't really traverse in the healthy food realm until I was 19 or 20. So it's very likely that they've never had some healthy items before. So I want to be able to introduce it to them in a way where it's in a meal that is familiar to them. If I'm talking collard greens and baked chicken, so be it. My chef can make it where that's nutritious for you. So that's kind of what we're doing in terms of the hot machines. The cold machines, we are trying to put smoothies, juices, teas, wellness shots, healthy alternatives to snacks, like chips, things like that. And another thing that we really want to focus on is making sure that what we're putting in our machines are as locally sourced as possible. We have a lot of food talent, a lot of farmer talent in Louisville alone, especially in Kentucky. And so I'm not really keen on, outsourcing outside of the state with big companies when we can source within ourselves and really give back to that Kentucky pride feel. So we want to work with local farmers, local growers to sell their things, give them an extra stream of revenue. So definitely locally sourced things and those culturally relevant things. No machine will have the same items in them. And eventually, what we plan on doing is having a smartphone application where if you're looking for something specific or if you're looking for the nearest Nori Project machine near you, you'll be able to do that and say, hey, I want the hot meal machine with the soul food, with the healthy soul food in it. Oh, it's over there on that block. Bet I'm on my way. So that's kind of how we plan on doing it.
No, I
Oh, that's
love the
awesome.
mindset
I
and
guess one.
approach to this. It's really thoughtful of how you want to engage with the local community in the processed foods. I think you have to meet people where they are, but also introduce healthier options to them. And really thinking your thought process and mind roadmap around this is really unique and thoughtful. The one thing Ricky and I are always talking about, going from like that corporation to entrepreneur and thinking, hearing you already only 8 months in and some of the traction you already made. I know you're going through the WOW Accelerator currently as well. Early on, as your entry point to entrepreneurship, like where have been some of the key things that kind of got you up to speed to learn very quickly and also still continue to push the growth of the project you're working on?
I tell you what, I'm not even gonna lie to y'all. This whole entrepreneurial journey and learning all of the things that I had not even a base knowledge of before in terms of starting and running a corporation, it has been more challenging than law school because it's in real time. And like you said, I've only been doing this for 8 months, so I'm moving very quickly. And I wouldn't be able to do that without all the support I have from Natalia Bishop and Lydia Henshaw and Kelly Yvonne. So we're moving very quickly, but I think really what got me going the best, that got my footing, was working with Amplify Louisville with Lydia. And she really was like, she answered all my questions, and she's just as excited to see the Nori Project succeed as I am. So she helped me get started, she helped me get incorporated, she helped me do all the basics. And then from the other creative startup founder position, Natalia came in, and we know how she does. She slays all of the entrepreneurship things. So it's just been amazing to really work with them to get going. It's been like an accelerated business degree, I guess. It's just been,
It
it's
is.
insane. And the Wild Accelerator particularly has been challenging because Natalia's the director, she's the lead, and she does not take no shit. So she wants to see us succeed, and she will do everything to make sure that we do. And it's hard and it's fast, but it's amazing because being in a room with six or seven other black and brown women doing the same thing and having that support, looking the same, going through the same thing, and knowing that we're all going to be successful is just an amazing experience. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. But I tell you what, if anybody is listening to this that plans on applying to Wild later, you better get your gym shoes ready, because you got to be sprinting. It is tough, but it's well worth it, and I'm so thankful for it.
That's awesome. Said having that community. I think for us, that was the same way, like getting kicked off, having all those, you know, accelerators, being a part of those programs, just having that community around you, like to bounce ideas off of, you know, not being a founder with an MBA, you know, coming. I mean, I feel like whether they want you to be a technical founder or you got to have the business side or whatever, you know, not having, you know, that can, you know, can be a barrier, you know, sometimes. So getting ramped up in all of those, the terminologies and everything, mm-hmm. the report statements and all of those things, has kind of been cool. So I hear you when you talk about, it's like trial by fire and learning while going through it.
All right. Before we get to like some fire round questions that we'll get to really quick answers, as you kind of, you know, what are the next steps like for the vending machines and what are you looking to do? And also early on conversations with different communities or organizations, what are some lessons learned you already have on this initiative?
So I'm going to answer your second question first. I came up with this idea back in October, and I started talking about it in other spaces in November. So, and I feel like I very much got kind of the cold shoulder on it. There were some people like, oh, this is cool. But a lot of people were like, nah, this is not going to happen. I'm thankful for my experience with failing two bar exams that, you know, that type of rejection does not bother me. I use it as fuel. So a lot of people and a lot of programs that I've applied to that have denied, so be it. I'm still moving full force ahead. But it depends on the type of spaces and the types of rooms you get in. Also, because I still am very new, and a lot of people are like, you know what, let's wait and talk to you after you've got a year or two under your belt. That's fair. But I don't plan on moving on anyone's timeline, because the food deserts aren't going anywhere. So I'm trying to move as fast as possible to get that food justice to people. As far as next steps, our next steps are graduating Wild Accelerator. So we've got about 3 weeks left, and it's going to be tough. And we've got our demo day on June 1st. And then after that, we're planning a soft launch to really get some validation data and numbers. So we've worked with Cardinal Consulting Company at U of L, and they've got us some strategic locations on where we're going to put these machines. And I'm super excited because they did an amazing job. I've also worked with TARC to get some really good spaces near bus stops to put these machines. So we've got some strategic locations, and what we plan to do with our soft launch is kind of do a pop-up shop. I plan on working with some of my suppliers. Right now I'm working with Chef Prep Meals, Elixir Kombucha, and Kentucky Greens. So working with them and some other suppliers to sell their items in those locations, see how it does, so on and so forth. And to my surprise, I've actually had some people ask me to have a soft launch at their location, usually residential places. They're like, we want to see how it does. You know, if you think it does well, put a machine here once you get the machines. So that was surprising to me, but I think it's great. So that soft launch is what we plan to do. And then within the next 90 days, we plan to officially launch a fundraising round so we can get that capital to get those machines going. We've actually got a couple of contracts right now that we plan to close soon because we have several different offerings. Not only are we going to, you know, do direct to consumer with the vending machines, but we've got two other offerings where businesses can advertise their business on our machines because they'll be everywhere across the city, kind of like a billboard type of situation, but more direct. And then our third offering is an account membership. Like if you want a machine in your space, you can do that. So we've got a couple of contracts with those offerings that we're trying to close soon. But next steps, that soft launch, an official fundraising round, and then by 2024, I really plan to have everybody start seeing these machines in various locations.
That sounds awesome. I'm excited to grab my first meal from a nori vending machine in the city, so that'll be awesome.
Yeah, great work. Excited to keep track of your progress on that. And like you said, Ricky said, we'll be big supporters of that. So, with that,
Thank you.
we're kicking off the fire round. Five quick questions. Ricky and I will alternate back and forth. Are you ready?
I guess.
You're a reader. First question, what is your favorite book recommendation and why?
What is my favorite book recommendation and why? The autobiography of Malcolm X is my favorite. I love reading autobiographies. I'm a little bit of a history nerd. And why? I thought it was empowering personally. I read it back during my gap year. It was empowering to me, especially being from Woodford County, Kentucky, where there's not many people that look like me there. It really helped me come into my blackness a bit, and feel more confident about that and navigating white spaces. It helps me feel a sense of pride, as a black American. So that's why.
Yeah, I
Love
think I
that.
read that in college too. I think my frat brother gave it to me. He's like, "Bro, you got to read this." And I'm like, "Yeah,
Yeah.
life changing."
It is, yeah.
All right, next question. What is the best piece of advice that you've been given on your startup journey?
Best piece of advice that I've been given on my startup journey. I'd say, so a couple of people have asked me, why hasn't this worked before? People are like, people try to do similar things as what the Nori Project's trying to do. Why hasn't it worked before? And I think it's important to know to a degree, but also at the same time, I think it's important to, have that knowledge that you need to know that it's going to push your company forward where others didn't make it through. It's important to base yourself and your own diligence in that and knowing that you'll get through it. So I think to answer that question, just to say, when people ask you certain questions, you can just, in a very professional way, tell them to fuck off because you know yourself more than anybody else does. And you know your project more than anybody else does. And if you know you're going to make it happen, you're going to make it happen, period. So.
Facts. Don't bet on the business, bet on the founder.
Exactly. Yes.
Gotta bet on the founder. So talking about founders, right? If you what two people will you pair to birth the ultimate entrepreneur?
So. Part of one of Wild Accelerator's offerings, we get leadership coaching, and we actually have that exercise. So it's crazy that you asked. So my two people are Angela Davis and Olivia Pope, who's a fictional character, but those are my two, and I call her Angela Pope, and she's my leadership person, I guess. When I really need, when I'm feeling a little worn out, burn out from business stuff, it's like, you know what? I gotta snap back into it. I need to put my Angela Pope hat back on. Really, that activism, that be about your stuff, that sharpness, like Olivia Pope. So those would be the two I pair together.
Love it. All right, and
Honora
for the
Morden,
final question.
aka Angela Pope.
Yes.
Yeah. And for the last question, what do you believe is the secret sauce to making unicorns?
The secret sauce to making unicorns. You can't make a unicorn. Unicorns are born. They're not made.
I like it. I like it.
All right, I love it. Well, Honora, we thank you for your time. We appreciate it. We love the project you're working on, and we are wishing you much success.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. This has been amazing. I can't wait to hear it again. I'll probably sound crazy, but hey, this is authentic Anora, so thank you guys for having me.
Authentic conversations
Thank
only.
you.
So thank you again. Peace.
I have like this 65-year-old.
I put in time to ease my mind. Now all the time.